Baby girl, first of all, you need to know I love you. You are the reason for these love letters. Sweetheart, we cannot explain why we do what we do sometimes. The answers are complicated. What you should know is that you have the right to choose whether or not you're in a happy relationship or a violent relationship. You may not see that if you're too close or scared, but it is true. You do have the power to choose. It may take time, but the answer is still up to you. We cannot change what others have done or do, but we can change how we respond to it. We can learn from it. 35 years after I was taught that I was worthless, and here I am writing to you in the hopes to create a space for knowledge and empowerment instead of self-hate and subconscious self-sabotage. It took me 35 years to unwind it all and learn who I was and the power I had as a woman. I don't want anyone to suffer that long. So as of right this moment, you are choosing you. You are going to stop punishing yourself by staying in a situation that hurts you. Today is the beginning of the rest of your life. So before we dive right into these love letters, I would like to share a quick overview of the events that happened in my life. Events that shaped me for life. Events that cracked my spirit. And thankfully, all these events have put me right here, writing to you out of so much love. Please note, I will be using graphic language. I will use the language I was immersed in. I believe it is important to teach you what a monster really sounds like, so I apologize ahead of time. So here is my life story in a nutshell. I grew up in a home where my mother was almost murdered by my father, the monster, at least once every 3 months or so. I'm an oil brat, little different from an army brat, but the traveling and living abroad is similar. The monster would threaten to kill us all consistently. When we lived in Spain, I remember him violently shaking me out of my sleep and throwing me on the floor in the middle of my bedroom from the top bunk. Then he dragged my sister out of her bed. I looked at the clock and it said 3:33 a.m. in the morning. I will never forget those numbers. He threw our suitcases at us and screamed at my little sister and I to start packing our suitcases. I just remember throwing whatever in the bag and I started to panic. I realized my mother was gone. Our older sister was gone. While trying to suck in my fear deep down in my tummy and choking on my tears, I mustered up the courage to ask him where they both were. All he said was gone. I thought the worst and prayed to my angels that he killed them quick and prepared myself that this is it. We are next. But the suitcases didn't make sense to me. If he was going to kill us, why are we packing? Again, I choked back the tears, and I know my questions are starting to piss him off, but I bravely pressed. I asked as I felt those hot tears, you know the ones, run down my face. Where are we going, Daddy? He looked straight at me and said, I'm selling you to the Arab on the boat. In today's terms, we call it human trafficking. I started to beg him not to sell us, and he told me to shut up. We were bad girls, and he can get extra money for blonde hair, blue-eyed little girls, and we all deserve to be a man's slave. I knew if we got on that yacht, we were not coming back. I was 8 years old. My baby sister was 7. Needless to say, the message I got growing up was that I was worthless. I was never good enough, no matter how behaved or respectful I was. I was still not good enough to have the love of a father. He made sure to hammer this home. He wasn't much for repeating himself. And we knew any time if we stepped out of line once, he really would kill us. I believed him. We all believed him. Funnily enough, it was that fear that protected us. I grew up with that death threat my whole life, right into my early 20s. As a child, I learned many things from my monster, especially the way he tortured my mother. I learned that women are to be seen and not heard. At 10 years old, I learned that it was okay for a husband to try to drown his wife in the toilet while pissing on her head because she talked back to him. And every single one of us knew if we ever tried to reach out for help to anyone, ever, we were dead. And there was no 911 back then, no matter where we lived. When we left Canada to go live in Spain, it was the perfect storm for my monster to thrive and amuse himself while he abused us. My mom was young and stunning, with her 3 beautiful little blonde girls in tow whom she completely wrapped her heart around. We were completely alone in a foreign country, None of us could speak Spanish, so there's a language barrier. My monster was working somewhere in North Africa, and he would skip across the Mediterranean Sea to the Spanish Balearic Islands every 3 weeks and raise hell for the week he was home. Then he was gone for 3 more weeks. Typical oil brat life. We had no family, so the isolation part was easy for the monster, simply by geography. Exactly what an abuser prays for. The sooner she is isolated, the better, in fact, so he could completely torture my mother free of any accountability. There was no one to rescue us. The worst events always happened when he drank. Bacardi and Coke, I can still smell it and feel sick. Get us little ones off to bed and let the games begin. Only he was not playing, and the game every time he drank was always Russian roulette. Of course he turned into a complete narcissistic psychopath. He had the reins. He controlled absolutely everything. So the crazy settled in nice and cozy. So I watched and I learned. My mother. This lady was shiny from the inside out, and no matter what that monster tried to do to her, she kept her little light shining. As soon as he left to go back to work, we had 3 weeks of fun and love every time, all the time. She did keep us alive and eventually saved us all by saving herself. But the process took her years because she didn't know what he was doing to her was wrong or how to fix it. Hell, sometimes the torture would last for days. No one ate. No one left their bedrooms unless it was to go to the bathroom, which is where I drank tons of water. I don't know if my sisters did that, but I did. I didn't know how long his temper tantrum was going to last. Water was all there was. I can't recall the mornings after. They are all a daze. I understand now that we were all in shock because he was so violent. And even as a child, I noticed his temper tantrums were getting super scary the older I got. He traumatized us monthly. So the mornings after, I was just thanking God we were all still alive. And when he goes back to work, we could all breathe again. We moved from the United Kingdom when I was 10. He got his own office, so he never left. There was no more 3 week sabbaticals of love and fun. The violence came more often and got more dangerous. I remember waking up in the middle of the night to screaming. I thought he was killing my mother and big sister. I ran downstairs and found my sister and my mom pulling my monster off of his work colleague we had had dinner with a few hours before. Now his violence is spreading into his work. There was blood gushing from this poor man's head, the brightest blood all over the blue carpet. My monster was smashing this man's head against the brick fireplace in the living room. Nice way to wake up in the middle of the night. My mother, sister, and myself all pulled the monster off this poor man. This man survived but was left with massive scars to his head and face. When his wife picked him up to get medical attention, my dad turned on the three of us. My monster was held accountable to nothing until right this minute. I will not hide in his dark, sick shadows any longer. It is time to put a hot, bright spotlight on my father, the monster, and the horrific ways he tortured the four of us. See, until this book and the return of all of my memories, this monster has gone totally unaccountable for everything he did to his little family. No more. I kept score. Ding, ding, Daddy. So brave is what I think of when I think of my beautiful mother. Strong and resilient, and she gave that monster everything she had, and he still stole more. He cheated on my mother and confessed. Then he tried to burn the house down with us in it. Oh yes, he was a peach. My mother mustered up enough courage to pack us up and bring us back home to Canada. Things were a lot different back home, where her support was, where her little sister and her big brothers were. Family. To me, apart from my Auntie Bunny, all these family members we had were complete strangers. My world was spinning, and it didn't stop until I was 27 years old. And by this time, I had blown through a marriage and become a sick, single mom of two. As I look back to my late teens and reflect, I realize, I can tell you, I was an absolute mess. I was blessed with good men in my life and a few loves who treated me with total respect and real love. Thank you. You know who you are. But something was not right. It felt wrong. So I left the good guys and kept searching. At 17 years old, I landed myself a hot, good-looking guy. He had a flashy car. He bought me things. He called me stupid and whore and bitch. Then he would surprise me at school with a limo and a picnic lunch. Yep, I was ripe for the pickings for monsters for sure. It felt familiar to me, like I fit. I knew my place and where I belonged. This guy didn't like any of my friends, so I hung out with his. I couldn't get to mine anyway. They were all about 45 minutes drive away, and it was his car, so when he picked me up, I was gone with no way home until he wanted a night out with the boys. After he raped me, he told me to move out of my home and in with him and his family. I did, completely isolating myself from my lifelines, my support, my safe, my mother. I watched this guy's mother run her ass off daily. There were four men she looked after, and only one of her. Mr. Perfect had me now, so things for his mother improved slightly, with me to help her. And God help her if dinner was not on the table when his dad got home. Yep, this is how life goes. This is familiar. This is where I fit. I almost got myself killed by Mr. Perfect because I tried to end my own life. And not once did I give consideration to the lady who sacrificed her life to keep me alive, or how my boyfriend's demands ripped her in two. I devastated my mother. I broke her heart, and my choice in boys was impaired, and there was nothing she could do about it. I never even called her, and then I was not allowed to use his phone, so I kept going and going and going, spinning, dancing, trying harder. I couldn't do enough, and I could not get anything right. I started cutting myself around 15 years old, when we left the monster. The cutting stopped for a while, but as soon as I was under my boyfriend's roof, I started cutting again, just to stop the hurt, the crazy-making. These days, they call it gaslighting. The gaslighting damaged any self-esteem I had left, which was not much. The guy was a drug dealer. I had no clue. I danced on eggshells, and I would hurt myself. I'd do anything to make it stop. I prayed when I'd cut myself up that this time I'd cut too deep. I had fallen in deep love with a monster. I actually consider myself lucky. The worst this boyfriend ever did to me was rape me, but he didn't mean it. I need to be a better girlfriend, so I tried harder. He would call and leave messages at my work or at my mom's house on her voicemail, losing his temper, screaming, "Where the fuck are you? I just dropped you off. I'm coming back to pick you up, so you better get your ass by that door. Don't make me wait." When I tried to protest because Mr. Perfect was breaking my brain, it was all-out war. His shoving turned into punches. I tried harder, made him dinner. If I forgot something, he would snap, screaming, "Don't argue with me, just fucking do it, you stupid idiot." Oh yes, that is how he talked to me, daily, and I believed him. He convinced me that my beautiful mother was controlling, and I couldn't trust her. Every time she reached in to save me, he convinced me that she was trying to wreck our relationship, sabotage it. I was embarrassed that I was being hurt, and I couldn't stop it. How could I? I was conditioned by my monster, and Mr. Perfect hammered it home by using all the shame I felt to keep me in line at all times. I got to the point where I could feel the stress and anxiety building, so I scurried around on eggshells and danced, never sure what mood Mr. Perfect was in when he came home from wherever he was. So instead of drowning in all of these dance steps and eggshells, I would literally pick a fight to get to the makeup part. I would lash out, throw things like he did, punch walls. So in my own eyes, I was just as guilty as he was. Of course he overpowered me. He was a guy. The imbalance of power was gross, and I just started shutting down. So as a good girlfriend does, I stood in front of him and not only took bullets for this piece of crap, I stood up and defended him, even after the rape. My monster broke my brain so much so that I believed this guy loved me. I believed he was Mr. Perfect. Besides, this was the only love I've really identified with. It was true love. And I was willing to die at 17 years old for this guy. I completely missed my graduation. I put everything on hold for him to build him up, counting on his potential, helping him reach his dreams. I gave him everything, including my self-respect. I handed all my money that I worked for over to him, Mr. Perfect always made me feel guilty, telling me we didn't have money for this or we did not have money for that. Here's me. Oh, have mine. And he took it. All of it. I would buy him gifts. He stopped buying me gifts. Loving me was a chore, so buying me anything was out of the question now. I didn't deserve it. I hated life and I hated myself, so I took a bottle of pills and woke up in the hospital. A kind nurse came in and gave me a pamphlet on abusive relationships. She told me to keep the pamphlet a secret in case my boyfriend finds it and beats the living daylights out of me again. I totally agreed with her. Holy Lipton, this nurse was going to get me killed giving me that little pamphlet. She was a straight talker. I liked that. No time to waste. She explained that he was in control of everything and he was possibly taking advantage of me. She said I needed to be in control of this in order to stay safe, so she asked me to promise her I wouldn't say a word to him about our conversation or the pamphlet at all, no matter what. I read the pamphlet before I was released from my suicide watch. My head was spinning. I had just realized for the first time that I was actually being abused. This was not a normal, healthy relationship. I was gutted, a lot more aware and a lot more afraid. I realized I was in deep trouble, so I did what the pamphlet told me to do, and I reached out. My mother and my Auntie Bunny were right there to catch me, the only family support I ever really had. They helped me save my life. I left all my belongings behind. My safety is more important than clothes, makeup, TV. I quit my job and went to stay with my mother's parents, where Mr. Perfect couldn't get to me. He would leave angry messages, hang up, call back with threatening messages, hang up, call back crying, hang up again, and threaten to kill himself over and over. The guilt I carried was heavy. I was addicted to this guy, and I wanted to go back so bad, even after he threatened my own mother. How sick is that? My thinking was completely distorted. I came home after hiding for about 3 months. Yep, Mr. Perfect didn't try to kill himself once. And he'd already gone back to his previous girlfriend. According to Mr. Perfect, she was crazy. Red flag. Nice, I know. I found out a little after that he never left her. Gutted and not good enough again. What is wrong with me? I should have been jumping for joy, but this only made me want him back even more. What a crazy mess. I started counseling to help me unravel it all. I remember I was 18, working at a music shop in the mall. I had gone to get some lunch. As I was eating my Orange Julius hot dog, I looked across the food court and found myself in great danger. I saw my monster, my father, along with his new beautiful wife, who looked just like my mother. I remember fixating on his face, dreading the seconds his eyes saw mine, and then, just like that, he walked on by without even a wink. I realized I had stopped breathing. I took a huge gulp of air and took a look around and placed my hand on my heart because it was beating so fast it hurt. As I became more aware of myself, I realized that everyone was looking at me because I was hiding under the table, in the front of everybody, in the middle of the damn food court on the busiest day of the week in the biggest mall in the world. I was mortified and sick to my stomach. My monster had broken my brain so much so that even after not seeing him for 18 months, I still automatically went into this survival mode I had been programmed with as a little girl. Needless to say, I haven't had an Orange Julius hot dog since. At 20 years old, a full 8 months away from boys, he finally found me. The one. I finally belonged to someone. We got pregnant and I married him. It was perfect. By this time, the name calling and put downs were in full swing. I got sick, and at 23 years old, my mother took me aside and shared her concerns. My husband was neglectful, mean when he got drunk. I didn't know what the hell to do. I was sick with two babies. He was my husband. The day everything changed was the day he went for my kid and put me in a cast. I would have left him way earlier, but I had surgeries and recovering to do, and there was always this guilt in my head saying, give more, work harder, dance. He will pay attention to me. He will love me more. So I stayed, tried one more time, and I tried again and again and again. Nothing changed, and when I asked him to leave, he flat out refused, so I lashed out. I lied. I was mean. I totally cheated on him. hoping that that would drive him away. No such luck. And because of the supports I had in place from before, I knew that my brain was still broken because I'm right back where I started again, and I needed help. Only this time, I have two babies. I reached out for a lifeline, and my family physician referred me to a psychiatrist. I was so ashamed of being so damaged. The guilt was a weapon my husband hit me with over and over. The psychiatrist I saw not only managed medication because I was so depressed, scared with two kids, I did not want to end up trying to hurt myself and taking them with me in the process. Yes, reread that. Remember, my brain was broken, so these were the actual thoughts I had. I knew if I was going to kill myself, I was taking my babies with me, because there's no way I would have left them here on Earth without me to protect them. I get why mothers kill themselves and take their children with them, because the monster is too big for her, and she can't leave her little children with him now, can she? My husband had already gone for my son, and I know how this shit goes down. I grew up with and somehow survived Satan, so there was no effing way I was leaving my kids behind. I knew if I decided to take my own life, I was going to drag my kids into the next life right along with me, because anywhere was better than here. My mother never abandoned me. I will never abandon my children. And physically hurting my children was out of the question, so I unapologetically got help. Dr. C saved all three of us. She used talk therapy with me. Most of the things that my monster did to me as a child had been blocked out. I had no idea how come I kept getting into these impossible abusive relationships and putting myself in danger. I was angry at my husband, my world. I told my husband about my affair with the psychiatrist in the room so that she could explain to him that I was having some sort of post-traumatic reaction to some of the things that were happening in my marriage, things he was doing to me, and we couldn't figure out why or what the triggers were, because my childhood memories were missing. Kind of hard to put a puzzle together with half the pieces missing. Even if you're the best doctor ever, which Dr. C was and still is today. I'm not really good at lying. I tried it, and all it did was piss my husband off more, which was the point. I was getting desperate. I had hurt the father of my children so bad, there was no way I was taking him back. Scared I would hurt him, again, or myself for that matter. Of course I love my husband, but I couldn't respect him or trust him anymore. I had to leave. So from the moment I sat in Dr. C's office together with my husband and talked, he wrapped up what she said and started using my broken brain as a weapon. He called me a mental case, crazy, bipolar. And no, my husband is not a doctor, but he had no trouble labeling me. And because I was seeing a psychiatrist, he and most of his family judged and convicted me. And a part of me gets it. I hurt their son, their brother, but there were reasons, good reasons, on my husband's part and mine. But because I was depressed and with this stigma in our society on mental illness, well, it armed the father of my children. And now he has even more power to use, and he took that stigma and he beat me with it, and does to this day, the buffoon. To this day, he still talks and talks and talks and talks and talks about how bad a person I am. Typical behavior of abusive men. He moans about what a terrible wife I was and what a horrible person I was. My monster and my husband would have been BFFs. Neither monsters ever took any responsibility for their behavior once. Oh, look, another hot, bright spotlight. Listen, I didn't get there all by myself. My husband was just another monster, and I certainly was not going to stay in a relationship where my husband hauls off on my 2-year-old baby boy because he dropped a kernel of popcorn on the carpet while watching Barney. I wanted out. Things went downhill from there to the point where he was threatening to kill himself if I left him or told my children the things that he did to me. To this day, I've kept my promise, and I allow him to slander my name. He can't hurt me anymore. There are so many moments in my life where I bit my tongue so hard it would bleed to protect him for my children's sake only. But in order for me to survive, I had to leave him. And like a typical narcissist, he would use the children to hurt me rather than be a good co-parent. And any interaction that we had was extremely volatile. He was emotionally and mentally exhausting, abusive, and negative all the time. He was mean 1 minute and crying the next. This went on and does to this day. Fast forward 21 years and here I am writing to you. It was fight or flight or freeze. I chose flight. After a whole year of violence, threats, and neglecting his fatherly role, he finally met the person he is with now and left me alone to heal. But he still plays the victim, and he drowns himself in his own little pity party every night at the bottom of a bottle. Pathetic. I'm 45 years old today, remarried for the third time. Second marriage ended as soon as the vows were said, because the man I married started to abuse my children. Yep. After being single for a couple of years, with therapy, I still picked another monster. It was here I discovered the mother bear in me, and I knew I had to pack up and leave because if I didn't, I would have killed him in his sleep because he was hurting my child. Oh yes, I repeated the abuse cycle over and over and over again, and I was with men who had displayed at least two or three violent traits my monster had. So the third time I got married, I let God choose because clearly my track record was terrible. I couldn't pick a nice guy. I didn't know how, and all the signals I was giving off attracted more monsters. So either God decides, or my girlfriend Frederic and I agreed that if I met a guy and I wanted to date, I would introduce him to her. And if I did not get her approval, and she's picky, I was never going to date him again. Even as a 35-year-old grown woman and a mother of two, I still doubted my own gut. I ignored the bad vibes and made bad decisions when it came to men, plain and simple. And I dragged my babies through the mud with me, searching for normal, whatever that was. I just wanted to feel safe for once, have calm for once, stop dancing for once. I wanted a good example of a man for my children to learn what healthy love looked like. Luckily, because of continued therapy and constant self-care, I met a man who is my compass and everything that is love, the real healthy kind of love. And just as I catch my breath, I witness all of my daughters, Step, Foster, and my own, repeating the cycle that I should have died in, because that is what happens when you're in a violent relationship. My track record is proof of that. Every time I thought I found love, that damn monster showed up in a different body, but still the same monster, with the same agenda. As life progresses, children grow up and leave, and when all of my distractions, my kids, moved out, my memories moved in. So not only was I trying to save my girls from their abusive relationships, all my childhood memories returned and laid me out cold. On top of that, my daughter finds herself in a life or death struggle with an abusive piece of crap, and I was literally scared to death for her. I knew I needed to save her, and I did not know if I could save her. And like my mother 20 years ago, I would sit up all night dreading the knock at the door, anticipating a police officer coming to tell me my daughter was killed by the same animal, the same monster. I thought I had done a great job at breaking the cycle of abuse. Are you kidding me? It was like I had my children in headlocks running down this hallway of life, slamming us up each side of the walls, trying to get to the light at the end of the tunnel. And I failed. I failed my daughter. I failed myself. I must have been the most terrible mother. I tried my best and I failed her, which fit into the theme of my life accordingly. So the reason that I'm writing these love letters is so that every girl, every daughter, and you can use my story and recognize the abusive traits in a guy and how the cycle is passed down from generation to generation in order to empower yourselves to prevent or stop another cycle of abuse. Otherwise, the cycle is learned by your children and the deadly game continues to destroy families. You are the reason I'm writing this love letter. This book and the tools in it are only to help all daughters to preferably recognize these violent traits before they become trapped and forever damaged on the inside by abusive, manipulative boys. I wrote this book to teach our young ladies how to escape safely. We as women and mothers need to pass on a legacy of love, assertion, self-confidence, and self-love so we prevent our little girls from running into burning death traps. We need to raise survivors, not victims. There should have never been a hashtag MeToo movement. I want to help prevent hashtag MeToo moments by arming our daughters with rape prevention tips, safe dating tips, including what to do if you're ever in an exchange where a guy starts exhibiting abusive traits before and after you start investing emotionally. I wrote this for every girl out there who does not have a strong mom or those who have no mom at all. This is for you, from a mom who understands, who has lived it, who has survived it, and who loves you unconditionally. I hope this helps. Love, Mom.